एवायम ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So the verse that we'll be covering now is Canto 8, Chapter 16, and verse number 41. So we have a lot of verses to cover, so I'm going to go right into the verse and instead of going over each individual word, although we will be covering that in word meanings. So I have a little competition. Excuse me. Can we have the child removed so that everyone may be able to hear the talk? Thank you very much. Appreciate your help. We love your child, but we also love Srila Prabhupada's words. And we can't hear them if your child is so nicely speaking. So, Niveditam tad bhaktaya dadyad bunjitava svayam. Let me do that again. Dadyad bunjitava svayam. Dadva cha manam architva. Tambulam cha nivedayat. Niveditam tad bhaktaya. Dadyad bunjita vasvayam. Datva cha manam architva. Tambulam cha nivedaye. Niveditam tad bhaktaya dadyad punjita vasvayam datva cha manam architva tambulam cha nivedaye. Please chant.
Shamanam architva Hambulam chanavedaye Nivedatam tad bhaktaya
Ladies, please. Ladies, please.
Ladies, please.
Nivedatam. This offering of prasad. Tat bhaktiya. Unto his devotee. Tadyat. Should be offered. Bunjita. One should take. Va. Either. Svayam. Personally. Tatva. Excuse me. That's tatva achamanam. Giving water to wash the hands and mouth. Architva. In this way. Worshipping the deity. Tambulam. Betel nuts with spices. Cha. Also. Nivedaye. One should offer. Translation. One should offer all the prasad to a Vaishnava, or offer him some of the prasad, and then take some oneself. After this, one should offer the deity achamana, and then betel nut, and then again worship the Lord. So let me just recap where we are and what this is about, who's speaking, and why he is speaking. It all started out when we will cover those verses, but some of you may not have attended some of the previous classes and may not know where this is, what this is resulting from, how it came about. So it happened to be that Kashyapa Muni, who was the husband of Aditi, mother of the demigods, he had been away for a while, and he came back, and he entered the ashram, and he noticed that everything was in order, everything was neat, everything was clean. The house looked like it had been taken good care of by his wife. And it appears that the deities were being taken good care of, since everything was in order, the deities had been dressed. So externally, outwardly, everything looked paka, everything looked nice. But there was more to it than just what externally appeared. What he felt was a sense of gloom, a sense of sorrow, a sense of frustration, a sense of suffering. He couldn't help feel it. Now, an ordinary human being might just come into the house and say, yeah, everything looks very good, it's orderly, it's nice, it's together, and then not even think anything further of it. But Kashyapa Muni is a sage. He's a devotee. He's a self-realized individual. So he's more sensitive than an ordinary human being. His sensitivity is such that he can pick up these more subtle vibrations. And he knows that something is wrong, and that something wrong, of course, was his wife, Aditi. And so when he gets together talking with his wife, he tells her what he feels about the place, and he asks her, what is bothering you? And so she says, what's bothering me is that I don't have my sons here anymore. This Bali Maharaj, with all his power, with all his brute, with all his ability, he's taken over all the planets, and my sons are out of a job. No unemployment there. So her sons are out of a job. The sun god isn't doing his job, and the water, and the Indra is not doing his job, and making the rain, and the wind god Vayu, he's not doing. They're all out of. They all had to leave, flee, and she doesn't know where they are. She doesn't know how they are. She's a mother, you know, grieving. Where are my sons? Like any mother would be. And she has some attachment to them, and there's a good reason for this attachment. I'm going to go into that a little bit. So she says, I want my sons. I want to have that company with them. I want to hear from them. I want to talk with them. I want to hear what they're doing and how they're feeling. These are normal things. For example, some of us might go home for a few days, and we see our mothers or fathers, and that's just what they ask. Well, how are you feeling, and how's your health, and what have you been doing, and all of these kind of things. It's part of family camaraderie. It's part of being in a family and feeling a connection, feeling some togetherness, feeling some relationship there. So she's yearning for this. She feels devoid of this. And she feels like her position of a mother has been, in a sense, yanked out of her. In other words, she feels that her children, who she feels a relationship with, a connection with, have been pretty much chopped off from her. Remember, she identifies herself with her physical body, even though she is a very highly illustrious and highly knowledgeable demigoddess. And I'll go into a little bit of her history, which tells us that she's not normally, ordinarily, a person who would be attached. She has no reason to be attached. She knows this philosophy. She practices this philosophy. But here, she is exhibiting symptoms of attachment. And Kashyapa Muni, he notes this, and he immediately comments upon it, and he says that you're so attached to your sons, and this is all illusion. This is not going to get you anywhere. You have a relationship with them, whether they're here or not here. So he knows that, although she understands this theoretically, academically, nonetheless, emotionally, she cannot handle that. Because, as I said, there's an emotional attachment, and she wants to see her children. She feels they're part of her body, and they are extensions of her body. And being extensions of her body, she feels that she wants to know what they are feeling, what they're doing. She wants to hear from them. She wants to, you know, look at them. She wants to feed them. These are the things that mothers like to do, and she can't do that. So Kashyapa Muni knows that as much theory and as much academics as he may give her, she will, yes, but that will still not stop her desire to want to see her children again. Because the emotional tie is very strong, and Krishna is aiding and abetting this. We have to go back a little bit into the history. In a previous lifetime, Kashyapa Muni and Aditi. Aditi was known as Prijni, and Kashyapa Muni was known as Sutapa. When the world had just been created, and Lord Brahma had been given an instruction, namely that I want you to create persons who will produce progeny in this material world throughout. So Sutapa and Prijni were told to do the same. So they asked to be excused, at least temporarily, because they wanted to get a very particular kind of son. A son who is the most supreme, the most glorious, the most best, if you will. No one could be higher, no one could be better, no one could be more extraordinary than the son they wanted. And who is that son? The Supreme Lord of the universe. That's not an easy thing to come by. You just don't say, you know, I would like to have this, my dear Lord, I would like you to be my son, and that ends it. No, there's much more to it. If one is going to have the Supreme Lord as a son, then he has to be qualified. He has to show he or she is worthy of this, is willing to do something to have such a precious, such a treasure, something so cherishable as the Supreme Lord as a son. So they went into the forest, the two of them, and they began to perform austerities literally for thousands of years. What kind of austerities did they perform? They lived in the forest. When it was cold, they exposed themselves to the cold. They took ice-cold baths in the river. They exposed themselves to the heat with fires around them, blazing sun coming over them. They bore this. They undertook it, and they tolerated it. So this is not easy to do. They stood on one leg for a while. And what did they eat? They ate leaves. They ate berries. They ate just water for a while, just air for a time. They practiced incredible, severe austerities, which is virtually impossible in this age, although there may be some people who can do this. But generally speaking, it's not our process. Our process, our austerity is to chant the whole Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just chant it and chant it and sing it until it's coming out of your ears, your eyes, your mouth, your skin pores, till you cannot even last. Ultimately, the goal is to purify, so that whatever contamination we have in the heart, in the mind, in the intelligence, in our speech, will be taken out, and it will be replaced by the purity of the Supreme Lord through the association with the Supreme Lord, by chanting His name with love in our heart, with a desire to please the Lord, and with appreciation of the Supreme Lord, who has been so kind and so merciful. So, but in those days, in Satyuga, people did practice lengthy, severe austerities. And so what happened was that thousands of years rolled by, and they continued performing this, living on air or water, subjecting themselves to blasting winds. Just think about it. We have to put ourselves in the position. Here the wind is blowing, and you just have a little piece of cloth on, and it's literally blowing into your skin, knocking you down. Maybe you have to get up. The cold, the heat. And all this time, they have one desire in mind, to have the Lord as their son. Ultimately, finally, the Lord appears. Lord Vishnu appears to them and says, I am pleased with your austerities. Now please tell me what you would like. So they mentioned to him, we would like you to be our son. He said, all right, you have performed enough austerity, enough penance, enough difficulty for me to do that. But I will not only appear to be your son just one time, I will appear as your son three times. So the first time, which was, I believe, in Satyuga, the Lord appears as Prajnigarbha. And they have him as a son, and they delight in his company, and they feel the spiritual love and joy and fulfillment and satisfaction which comes from having the Lord as your son. I mean, it's hard to picture it, because who can understand the vibrations? Who can understand the exude or the emanations of the Lord's love, and to be embraced by those emanations, to be looked up to as from by the Lord, to give nursing or to nurse the Lord? All of these are very, very intimate, close associations. So the next birth was that of Kashyapa Muni and Aditi, which is the one that we're dealing with in this chapter. They were demigods. Kashyapa Muni, demigod, I believe he's born from Marichi, one of the progenitors of mankind. And Aditi is a daughter of Daksha. And Daksha gave 13 of his daughters to Kashyapa Muni, Aditi being one of them, and Diti being another one of them. And Aditi, she is referred to by Srila Prabhupada, she's a goddess or a demigoddess, which means that she follows the principles that are given by the Supreme Lord. And she enjoys following them, and there's no problem as far as following them. That's the way she set up. Unlike her sister Diti, is known as the mother of the demons. And she doesn't always follow the principles. For example, how did she give birth to her first two sons? Well, it just happened to be that a surge of passion came over her. And she was sitting with her husband, and she indicated to him that she wanted to be intimate with him. And he said, this is not a good time to do that, because Lord Shiva will be passing by with his entourage. And when he passes, it's not a good thing to do this now. Let's wait until they pass by so that there is no reaction for that. So she said, no. And basically she yanked him, told of her sleeve like some prostitute, and dragged him outside into the grove that they had there, and became intimate with him. So he mentioned to her this would not result in an auspicious result. She didn't care. In other words, she put her passion ahead of the welfare, not only of themselves, but of the whole world. So what happened was that later on, who did she give birth to but Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, two gigantic, tremendously powerful demons who would eventually try to wreck the whole world, try to kill even Lord Vishnu. The point I'm trying to bring out is that by not following particular principles, namely, the principle here is disrespecting a great person, an incarnation of God, namely Lord Shiva and his assistants, to disregard them, not care about them, ignore them. Who cares? The only thing that counts is my passion and my desire to relieve myself of that passion. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's why in these books it's made very clear that we must learn how to be celibate. We must learn how to control the senses. We must learn how to regulate the senses. This is what Krishna says to Arjuna. He says that you have to learn how to regulate the senses. Regulate them means that if you have a passion, you don't yield to them. You put the passion, you put the genitals under your control rather than being under their control. And if we're under their control, then that means we become just like animals, and we yield to that. And what you end up with is an animalistic society, a chaotic society, a society that just yields to its passions, and yielding to its passions, all you can get is chaos and ultimately anarchy. So, coming back to the story here. So, as I mentioned before, that Aditi, she wants her sons back. And what happens is that Kashyapa Muni then says to her, realizing and feeling her suffering and her pain, well, if you want to have our sons back, the only way to do that is to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. We have to take refuge of him. He's very kind. He's all auspicious. He's all knowing. He's all powerful. He's present everywhere. He has all the opulences. So by taking shelter of he who is most powerful, most lovable, most adorable, most surrenderable to, that's how you will be able to achieve this goal. So she says, all right, what do I have to do? What's the secret? So he says, well, there's a particular vrata, or vow, that you have to take. And you take this for 12, you perform certain words, certain deeds for 12 days. It's called the Payavrata sacrifice. Now, Payavrata means the vow of drinking only milk. So she would have to, for at least 12 days, drink only milk. Now, she is a daughter of a king. And in a palace, generally, the prasadam, the foodstuffs, are full of variety. Sometimes they have 20, 30 different types of preps. And for a person who may have been used to that, or maybe now has cut down to 10 or 5, but it's not that easy to live on milk every day if you've been used to a variety, or unless you've been performing that kind of austerity day in and day out, like many yogis do. So that was what is meant by the Payavrata sacrifice. So Kashyapa Muni tells her that she should engage in devotional service, serve Lord Krishna to solve all her problems. He says that he is very, very merciful. So Aditi asks how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that he will be pleased with her and grant her
wish to have her sons back. And Kashyapa Muni, he will begin to explain the process that Brahma instructed him with to acquire offspring, and which satisfied Lord Krishna. So, I just wanted to give everyone the background of this and what the situation is, the circumstances surrounding it. And now I would like to just cover some of the verses that I'm expected to cover for today. So, I'm going to do just the English in this. Excuse me. So, Kashyapa Muni is talking about the vow, and talking about the principles, and he's talking about the exercises that she must perform. He says, thereafter, one should silently murmur the... I think I skipped something. Yes. Well, the first verse was, one should offer all the prasad to a Vaishnav, or offer him some of the prasad, and then take some oneself. After this, one should offer the deity Achyaman, and then betel nut, and then again worship the Lord. Next text. Thereafter, one should silently murmur the mantra 108, the mantra 108 times, and offer prayers to the Lord for his glorification. Does everybody or anyone remember the mantra that was given? Loud, let me hear. Yeah, exactly. That was the mantra that was given. It's the one that I chanted to begin this class. Then one should circumambulate the Lord, and finally, with great delight and satisfaction, offer obeisances, falling straight like a rod, dandavats. After touching to one's head all the flowers and water offered to the deity, one should throw them into a sacred place. Then one should feed at least two Brahmins with sweet rice. Next verse. Translation. One should perfectly honor the respectable Brahmins one has fed, and then, after taking their permission, one should take prasad with his friends and relatives. For that night, one should observe strict celibacy, and the next morning, after bathing again, with purity and attention, one should bathe the deity of Vishnu with milk and worship him according to the methods formerly stated in detail. That's earlier verses. Worshipping Lord Vishnu with great faith and devotion, and living only by drinking milk, one should follow this vow. One should also offer oblations to the fire and feed the Brahmins as mentioned before. In this way, until 12 days have passed, one should observe this payovrata, worshipping the Lord every day, executing the routine duties, performing sacrifices, and feeding the Brahmins. From Pratipat until the 13th day of the next bright moon, Shukla Trayodashi, one should observe complete celibacy, sleep on the floor, bathe three times a day, and thus execute the vow. During this period, one should not unnecessarily talk of material subjects or topics of sense gratification. One should be completely free from envy of all living entities, and one should be a pure and simple devotee of Lord Vasudeva. The point being made here is that if you violate these, you don't sleep on the floor, you don't drink milk, let's say you're taking milk, and then you have a yen or a craving for some, what do they call that,
sugar, natural sugar, which comes from the bamboo. What do they call that? Huh? Yeah, sugar cane. If you have a yen for sugar cane juice, you can't just break the vow, have your sugar cane juice, and then go back to it. You've broken it, that means you don't get the result. You'd have to start all over again. So in order to achieve what she wants to achieve, she has to give up at that point, not yield to, abandon any desire which contradicts, which goes against this vow that she has taken. Thereafter, following the direction of the Shastra, with help from Brahmins who know the Shastra, on the 13th day of the moon, one should bathe Lord Vishnu with five substances. Anybody know what those substances? If you've been to the to the different ceremonies we have here, you would know them. What are some of those? Five of those substances. Okay, one of them is milk. What else? Yeah. Yes. What was that? I didn't hear. It doesn't say water here. But the water is in the milk. So you're not completely wrong. Yes, yogurt. Correctly. Using your computer? Okay. So that's what it is. Milk, yogurt. Hmm? Yeah, right. Milk, yogurt, ghee, sugar, and honey. So those are the substances that he wanted her to use for this. So this has a tradition, and it goes far back. It's not like a Rabindranath that comes out and he just invents or just has a whim that we'll put some honey in because that tastes good, and we'll bring some yogurt because I like yogurt personally. That's not the way it works. It comes from a traditional disciplic succession, and so what we do when we do these ceremonies, we follow that tradition. So, going on, giving up the miserly habit of not spending money, one should arrange for the gorgeous worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the heart of every living entity. With great attention, one should prepare an oblation of grains boiled in ghee and milk and must chant the Purusha Sukta Mantra. The offerings of food should be of varieties of tastes. In this way, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. One should satisfy the spiritual master, the Acharya, who is very learned in Vedic literature, and should satisfy his assistant priests, known as Hota, Udgata, Advaryu, and Brahma. One should please them by offering them clothing, ornaments, and what else? Cows, yes. Perfect. This is the ceremony called Vishnu Aradhana, or worship of Lord Vishnu. Next. O most auspicious lady. Why is she auspicious? Because she's going to give birth to the Supreme Lord. And there's no woman more auspicious in the entire world at that time than her. So that's a nice adjective to precede this word lady. O auspicious lady, one should perform all the ceremonies under the direction of learned acharyas and should satisfy them and their priests. By distributing prasad, one should also satisfy the Brahmins and others who have assembled. Sorry. One should satisfy the spiritual master and assistant priests by giving them cloth, ornaments, cows, and also some monetary contribution. And by distributing prasad, one should satisfy everyone assembled, including even the lowest of men, the chandalas, or the eaters of dog flesh. Finally, we come to the purport. In the Vedic system, prasad is distributed as recommended here.
without discrimination as to who may take the prasad, regardless of whether one is a Brahmin, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or even the lowest of men, a chandala, he should be welcome to accept prasad.
So why is that? Why is that? Anybody know? You know, Maharaj. Anybody else besides Maharaj know? Well, the whole principle here is that prasad is given for everyone's advancement in spiritual life. So a person is a chandala, he's a dog eater. Well, we want to raise him up. We want to bring him up to a higher level. And how can you do that? By giving him or her prasad. Prasad is the mercy of the Lord. So when a person takes foodstuffs, which has been touched, which has been tasted, which has been delightedly accepted by the Lord, then it becomes holy food. And when a person has holy food, because they're living an unholy life, killing dogs and eating them, the whole idea is charitable, to bring them up to a higher spiritual level. This is the whole concept of prasad. Prasad is given out, especially in Govardhan Puja. It's thrown here, there, and everywhere, so that everyone can partake of the mercy of Krishna. This is a charitable mentality. Give it out, give it out, give it out. Isn't that what Srila Prabhupada is all about? Didn't he come and give it out? He gave the greatest prasad, of course, which is this glorious, wonderful, amazing book that I'm reading from, which has the power to transform us all from persons who are of a materialistic nature to a completely transcendental nature, and ultimately to become free of the anxieties, the uncertainties, the doubts, the confusions, the hostilities. All this we can become free of completely by this process of the nine forms of devotional service, of hearing about the Lord, chanting about the Lord, remembering Krishna, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshipping the Lord, uttering prayers to the Lord, practical devotional service to Krishna, and also having a friendly feeling, a feeling that the Lord loves you, He wants you back. And that's all over Srila Prabhupada's books, that Krishna wants us back more than we want Him. And He will do anything and everything possible to bring us back. So we should have a friendly feeling towards Him. And lastly, to give up our words for the glory of the Lord. Our deeds should be devotional service or activities which glorifies the Lord. And also our words, our thoughts should be of a high level in the sense of beautiful prayers to the Lord, whether they may be done mentally, or one can do them verbally as well. So, continuing on, I wanted to make this very clear that prasadam has a purpose. That's why we have these feasts. Also, Lord Shiva, he gives them his association. Who is them? He hangs out with all these ghouls and goblins and spooks and all kinds of ghosts, and you can't believe it. But that's his mercy, to bring them up, to bring them to a higher level, just by associating with him, since he's a pure devotee of the Lord. He's always meditating on the name Ram, 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 Ram. And they hear him, Ram, Ram, Ram. So they get the Ram in their ears. They get the Ram in their ears. Then they start. They don't know what they're saying, but they're saying the master is saying it. Meanwhile, they're also smoking ganja at the same time. Yeah, they take marijuana. But Lord Shiva is not telling them, no, 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 no. He allows that, but they keep Ram, Ram, Ram. Eventually, you don't have a taste for that because you've got a higher taste, a better taste, a greater taste, a taste of the presence of the Supreme Lord. When we have the taste of the presence of the Supreme Lord, we're inwardly joyful, inwardly happy, inwardly fulfilled. As the verse in the Bhagavad Gita says very nicely, it says, a liberated person, I can remember it, a liberated person, I forgot the verse.
uh,
It's one of those I know. I usually could say them at any time. It can wake me up at any time in the morning. I could usually give it to you. It's just slipped out of my mind, a liberated person. Yes, a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he concentrates on the Supreme Lord. So that concentration can come on the holy name of the Lord, a beautiful picture of the Lord, any or the associates of the Lord, the Dham of the Lord. All these are a means by which by one concentrates, one becomes purified and the process of purification. So in the case that I just mentioned, Lord Shiva, all of these persons who associate with him, they become purified and eventually, ultimately, they begin chanting Ram, Ram, not only just hearing it, and they give up their horrible ways and become much more sage-like or ultimately become devotees of Lord Shiva. Okay? So, coming back to this, I want to just finish the purport because I don't want to leave it in the middle. I'm almost finished. Regardless of whether one be a Brahmin, I already read that, I'm sorry. However, when the Chandala, the lower class or poorer class, are taking prasad, this does not mean that they have become Narayan or Vishnu. Narayan is situated in everyone's heart. But this does not mean Narayan is a chandala or poor man. The Mayavad philosophy of accepting a poor man as Narayan is the most envious and atheistic movement in Vedic culture. These are strong words, by the way. Narayan is the most, this mentality should be completely given up. Everyone should be given the opportunity to take prasad, but this does not mean that everyone has the right to become Narayan. In fact, no one has the right to become Narayan except Narayan. So he is, there's only one, but he can expand himself unlimitedly. In Vishnu Tattva form and in living entity form, but living entities are not equal to Narayan. Never are they equal, never are they better. So there we have it, all these different disciplines that Aditi must perform in order to have the Supreme Lord as her son. Here's a very interesting aspect or realization that kind of came to me, and that is since her husband is an advanced sage, she has this association. She's a demigoddess. She knows this philosophy. Why should she be attached to her sons? Even though she knows the philosophy, well, if she weren't attached to her sons, if she were detached, if she was indifferent, if she didn't care, for example, if she was simply in her God realization, simply realized, well, look, my son is not flesh and blood. My son is the spirit soul, just like I am a spirit soul. I am a spirit soul connected to the Supreme Soul. My son is a spirit soul connected to the Supreme Soul. So we're all connected. So what am I worried about being his not being connected with me here? Just because he's somewhere else, the connection is always there. And if I'm connected with the Supreme Lord consciously, and I'm feeling the presence and love of the Lord, then I'm feeling the presence of my son because the sons are, in one sense, non-different in the substantial sense of the word. Substantial meaning in quality. So, therefore, that would be the end of it. But then she wouldn't be begging her husband if she was so detached and so indifferent. She wouldn't be begging her husband, please, I want to have the Lord as my son. She wouldn't say that. She would just let it go. And then how would this pastime get enacted? The Lord has set this whole thing up very, very nicely. So therefore, she does ask, she does beg, she does entreat, and the result of that is that he gives her this Payavrata vow, and eventually the Lord will appear as Vamanadeva. And as Vamanadeva, as we all know from the story, Vamanadeva will trick Bali Maharaj in such a way that Bali Maharaj will lose his kingdom to Vamanadeva, and Vamanadeva, being the brother of Indra, will then, of course, give it to his brother, and Aditi will be very pleased to have all her children back again. But this is a very wonderful point. And also, again, why Kashyapa Muni did not harp upon this philosophy, there's only just a few verses for that. So this is a very wonderful point, that here's this woman who is the wife of Kashyapa Muni, and how powerful she is, how determined she is, how focused she is, and how much she has love for her children, so much so that she will virtually do almost anything and everything to get them back and bear all kinds of austerities, all kinds of difficulties. So how does that relate to us? Well, we're also observing various austerities. We're getting up at 3 o'clock and, or 3:30 or 2:30. We're chanting Hare Krishna in the temple. We're doing the different songs in front of the deity. We're doing many of the things that Aditi is doing. And why are we doing this? What is the purpose of doing that? To achieve what? Yes, exactly. Pure love of God. And it's just not going to be handed to us on a platter. Here, have your pure love of God. We're going to have to be doing things. We're going to have to be showing the Lord that we're trying to be. We're never worthy of it because we've committed so many offenses and sins. But we have to show the Lord that we're trying to be worthy of this. And when He sees our efforts to be worthy, when He sees that we're striving, that we're bearing insult and injury or difficulties, trials, tribulations, problems, pressures, strains, when He sees that we're willing to do that, and not only that, but even to die if necessary, because the goal is so important. And many of you are out on the street distributing books and so forth. Sometimes you don't always get a friendly remark. Get out of my face. I don't want to look at you people. If I see you again, I'll spit in your face. You get that sometimes. I got it. I got spit in the face when I was playing Santa Claus back in 1976. I was out there on the mall. Yeah, and I had the beard, and the guy spit in my beard. So anyway, I was able to take the chunk out and throw it away. But you never know what's going to happen. You may be wondering, why did he do that? Well, there was a Salvation Army guy across the street, and he was very envious. Envious that money was coming to me because, you know, we learned the techniques of how to raise funds, and nothing was going, or little was going, to the Salvation Army part. So he says, "You're taking away the money of the Salvation Army. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. I hate your guts. I hate your guts." And then spit in my beard, and that was the end of that. He walked away. I didn't say anything to him. I just bore it and just accepted it, and that's the end of it. And if you start biting back or fighting back, then before you know it, the police are there, you're in jail, and we don't need that. So I want to thank you all very much for listening and hearing this particular story of Aditi, and how she achieves a wonderful goal, and how we can use her as a role model, in a sense, by performing our duties, trying not to give excuses for not doing it. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki ja. Srimad Bhagavatam ki ja. Hare Krishna. Wow, really went over today.
That's the last, because after this, I'll go back.